For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
David Johnston, Logan Booker, second half kickoff this Monday morning, the first Monday of June. That's right. And Media Days will be next month.
Next month. Feels good saying that.
And that means we can say that Georgia's football season starts in a couple of months.
Yeah, August
31st. Even if it's really 3 months, but still, close enough. Had all of June, July, and August, but it is in August. So in a couple of months, we'll have Georgia football. Of course, we bring in Mike Griffith from the AJC's DogNation.com this time every Monday. And, Mike, good morning, sir. How's it going?
Going good, guys.
Excellent. Excellent. Let's get right to the spring meetings of the SEC. And, you know, when we look back on these, what are we going to think of? Is it going to be the alcohol stuff that seems to be the big topic now, and now it's almost like if you want to compare the SEC as being the federal government and the schools being the states, you know, now with states' rights, they can decide what they want to do here with alcohol. But what are you taking out of all of that?
Well, I mean, that's certainly the big outcome as far as what the president's voted on. It had never been voted on before, but, you know, they came up with a committee to study it, and they are going to leave it up to the individual schools. I know that Georgia, I don't think Georgia has any immediate plans to change their policy, talking to the president and Greg McGarrity. I mean, here's what people need to realize. This is what we're measuring, guys. This is what it boils down to. You want to give the fans amenities, right? But at what cost? At what risk? And it's not like Georgia's hurting for the money. I mean, McGarrity made it clear that Georgia is not adding a new area for the, you know, McGill Society high donors to drink in during the game because they need money. They're doing it as an amenity because it's something that's been, you know, requested, or there's enough people that have an interest in it. But when we talk about selling alcohol in the general seating, or in the student section, you run a risk. I mean, there's problems that come with that. There are inherent issues. Now, there's always been people that have snuck it in. We know that. And there's always been people that tailgate in the parking lot, and that won't change either. None of those things are going to change. Even if you sell it, there's going to be people that are going to say, I'm not paying that. I'm going to sneak in my own booze. And they're still going to do what they do in the tailgate. But if you sell it to the general population, you risk that environment. And I, for one, don't think Georgia should sell it in general seating, because I've seen what happens at NFL games, and I don't want to see Sanford Stadium turn into that. I think there's something special about that environment. I know Alabama's already on the record saying they're not going to sell it in general seating, and so is Auburn. There's a reason for that. And I think Georgia will go that direction, too, although they left Destin saying they're going to discuss it and review before they make a final call on it.
And it's not something that has to be done. I mean, doesn't have to be done now. Doesn't have to be done a year from now. If it's something they feel like they want to do, they can. I know this, too. It's like, you know, certain soft drink company, they pay a lot of money to have their soft drink at Sanford Stadium. So would the beer companies, and Georgia's got a lot of, you know, high dollar donors that are beer distributors, you know, there would be money to be paid just to get certain products in the stadium. I'm not saying that's a factor or not, but I think maybe the general public kind of forgets sometimes that it's not just Georgia calling up somebody and saying, hey, you want to put your beer here in the stadium? You know, there are prices that are paid. There's volume. There's things that have to be considered. Could you have a beer stand next to a concession stand, like you would see at like Mercedes-Benz Stadium or stuff like that. And frankly, you know, Sanford Stadium's not quite built to have a lot of that stuff out there. So there's a lot of things that would have to change. So I'm kind of like you. I mean, is it something that necessarily has to change? No. Is it something they could want to do? Certainly. But it's not just a matter of just waking up and saying, all right, we're going to put a Bud Light stand over here and a Miller Light stand over there and, you know, open them up. It's a little bit more complicated than that.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the complexities that would be involved. But, you know, big picture is the philosophical discussion
and
whether or not you want to have it. And, you know, I went on another show, and I can't remember which one or where, but it was out of state. And I said, it's kind of like speeding, right? I drive a little different in Tennessee than I do in Georgia. You know why? Because Georgia patrols like you wouldn't believe. I think I've already said that on the show. And I'm thankful that they do, because there's a lot of roads and a lot of population, and I appreciate that. I get it. You know, the Georgia State Patrol does a great job. I've got a lot of respect for them. When I got my first ticket, they were professional and polite, and you know, I deserved it. You know, I was trying to make time going to the beach on a back road, and I didn't see any. There was no other traffic and nobody else on the road. You know, so I was going 67 in a 55, guilty as charged, trying to make I was speeding.
Yep.
I was 12 miles over. I was.
You're hoping for that warning, but you got the ticket instead.
That's the way I looked at it, right? There's nobody else on the road. I mean, it's out there in the middle of the forest, one of the back roads between here and Tybee, and I'm thinking, oh, this is good. No, well, there was a state patrolman there. But what that did is that slowed me down everywhere else. So everywhere else, I said, well, I'm never, you know, I'm not getting another one, I can tell you that. So, but it changed, you know, so, and it's kind of like that not selling alcohol. If you start selling it, people will be more inclined to abuse it, right? No. Than if you don't sell it. That's kind of the way I look. I use the speeding thing as an example. If something that's moderated and governed and, then you're still gonna have a better grip on it than if you're actually selling. Just imagine if nobody was pulling people over for speeding. I mean, there'd be all sorts of abuses and dangers involved at a higher level, and that's kind of what I feel about alcohol sales. And again, I'm kind of biased. I've covered the SEC since 1993, and I've seen some bad scenes in NFL stadiums, and I think the SEC's environment is something that people need to be aware of and kind of be careful what you wish for.
There has been the argument made the last couple of days. Some folks are pointing out other programs that have sold alcohol out of the SEC for about 10 years now, showing sort of declines in incidents or maybe even higher sales and less ejections. Are these numbers flawed in some way, or why would we not expect positive results in the SEC like other programs are reporting?
I haven't seen that. It sounds, you know, I'm sure that's great, but I haven't seen those numbers. I haven't seen anybody say that, you know, the more alcohol you sell, the better the stadium environment. Is that what you're telling me? People are saying it? Because I don't believe that.
Some stats I've seen is that West Virginia reported a sharp decline in alcohol-related incidents. Oregon, the University of Oregon, they reported a 49% decrease in alcohol-related ejections in 2018 when they started selling alcohol. So there are certain things that...
Wait a minute. That just means they don't have to kick people out for, you know, that just means a lot of people that they were enforcing the no alcohol ban and they were having to kick people out for having alcohol before. Now they're probably not policing it anymore because they sell it. That's all that means to me. I mean, it's just like crime statistics. A lot of times you can look at crime statistics and one campus will say they don't have any incident. Well, they're not policing it. They're not charging it. It doesn't mean it's not happening. So I don't buy. I just to answer your question, I don't believe it. I don't buy it. I think that's a flawed statistic, and I think it has to do with how they're policing it now that they're selling alcohol in their stadiams. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and I think there are I agree with you, but I think there is an element of fans that won't think they have to binge drink and do, you know, 5 or 10 shots before they walk in the stadium, knowing that, hey, if I want to go get a beer or whatever, I can do that during the game as well. I'm not saying that's for everybody,
that's
but I think
that's
there is
true,
an
but
element
you know what
of
else
that.
There is? I agree, but you know what else there is? There's also an element of people, and I'm not saying it's the majority, it's a minority. Let's say 2%. Okay, let's say only 2% would abuse alcohol in a stadium. All right, so 2% is that's 2 out of every 100, right?
Yeah, 2,000.
So that's 20 out of every 1,000, right? So now we're talking about almost 2,000 in Sanford State. We're probably talking about 1,800 in Sanford. So there's going to be 1,800 of these people scattered around, and they might be sitting behind your granddaughter. They might be sitting next to your wife, and they might say something inappropriate, and they might throw up on your kid, or they might abuse an opposing fan and start a fight. There's 1,800 of them. You want to plug that in? That's only 2%, guys. Let's go less. Let's go 1%. Let's say 1% of the people abuse the alcohol that's sold in Sanford Stadium. You want to scatter those 820 fans around the stadium and take a chance? They're going to be sitting next to your daughter. They're going to be sitting next to your 5-year-old grandson and say a bad word. Are you good with dropping 800 people in Sanford Stadium like that? That's only 1%, David.
I know. I mean,
you good with that?
Well, I feel like that 1%, 2% is already there. I mean, it's not like there's not people now that are obnoxiously drunk because you can't buy it there. I mean, there are plenty of people. I know plenty of people, like Dave said, that take 10 shots right before they walk in the stadium.
Okay, well, you've got people like that there, and now you're going to add another 1% that are doing it legally. So that's like you saying, well, people are going to speed anyway, so don't patrol at all. We're getting back to the speeding analogy now. There's going to be people that speed anyway, even with speed traps. You're right, there are. There's going to be even more if you don't patrol it. Would you agree with that?
I do. I guess my thinking about this whole alcohol thing is kind of what we were talking about at the beginning of this conversation of why do some schools feel like it's necessary to have, or maybe not even necessary, but a luxury to have, other schools are just a little bit slower embracing it. And I've also heard this argument too, and I don't know that I necessarily buy this, is that, you know, with all the games being on TV, with all the amenities, do some schools feel like having alcohol as an option for the consumer that comes in, is that going to bring them to the game as opposed to staying at home and watching? And I don't necessarily buy that one either. I don't think that's the deal breaker.
Let me ask you guys this. We're looking at all sorts of issues in football. How about selling beer in high school stadiums to the parents?
Yeah.
Are you good with that?
Well, you know, that's the thing, though. When you're talking about, you know, where do you draw the line at where you can sell alcohol?
How about beer at Little League baseball games?
Yeah.
You know, Little League baseball, just to, you know, for the fans.
No, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. You're not selling to the kids. It's the environment, yeah.
Right. And now I'm not saying don't have it anywhere. I mean, just like Florida has a beer tent outside of Gainesville, you know, there's other premium areas. Georgia's in a premium area, and I think it's pretty extreme, you know, that you got to have, you know, donate 100. But it's there. But it gets back to, you know, and again, this is me, guys. Okay, I'm the guy that, you know, lives in downtown Athens, and you know, you're not going to see me out having more than one beer ever, you know. And I live downtown. I could be out every night, you know, kicking it up and having a great time. But I don't need to get drunk to have a good time. I don't need to have two beers to relax or a shot of alcohol to have a conversation with the stranger. I don't need that. I don't want that. I think I'm at my best when I'm sober, okay? I don't need alcohol to enhance my life. Now, some people do. Some people, that's their thing of choice, right? That's what they want to do. Some people might want to smoke, right? Hey, you know what? Pretty soon, they might legalize marijuana. People might want to bring their vape pans and get high in Sanford Stadium. What's the harm? They're going to do it anyway, right? I mean, to me, that's where I just say, I'll tell you what the problem is I don't want to stand next to that person. I don't want to smell it on their breath. I don't want to hear the dumb things that they're going to say. I don't want to have to remove a child or a friend from a nearby conversation because of this person. I'm not interested in seeing those people in the SEC stadium. To me, I don't need it to have a good time at a football game. I don't need alcohol to feel like I'm in an intense environment. Or if I were to go to a game as a fan to cheer any harder or feel any more passion for my team, what the hell is the point of going to the game? You want to get drunk or you want to watch football? Now, that's me.
Yeah.
You want to get, you know, because you can get drunk. You can sit at the bar and drink and get it a lot cheaper and be around other people that love to drink and watch football just as easily on the big screen.
Hey, personally, I love to get a contact high when I go to a football game. But no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But that's the difference between alcohol and the marijuana thing, too. But anyway, that's a whole other conversation for, well, for another thing. Yeah, I know.
It could be.
Who knows?
5-10 years down the road.
Who would have thought 15 years ago we'd be having this conversation about what's being sold on college campuses for games? Hey, the other big thing, I guess, last week was the transfer portal. And I don't know what's going to happen with all of this, but it was kind of interesting to see, like, some coaches saying, I wish it weren't there, I wish it were different. Other coaches saying, oh, well, we embrace it. But do you think the coaches that are saying they embrace it are just saying that because they know that's the thing they need to say and they don't want to detract recruits? Or what do you think is going to ultimately happen, or what the next stage of the transfer portal is going to be?
Well, that's true. They know it's not going anywhere. I heard more than one coach say that you know, it doesn't matter what they think of it, it's not going to go away. So now the focus is, you know, how do you make sure that the kids on the team don't get hurt by it? What they want to do, the next step that, you know, Greg Sankey said, is they want kids to know before they go in the portal if there is a potential waiver available. You know, like, so Luke Ford, for example, thought, obviously, that he was going to get to play right away at Illinois. So he transferred away from Georgia, went in the portal, went back to Illinois, and there's no waiver for him. He's not going to play. Now, would Luke Ford have put his name in the portal and transferred away from Georgia if he knew he was going to have to sit out a year? I don't know.
Yeah, we don't
but
know.
It would help. Yeah, but it would help players know in advance, before they put the name in the portal, if there's going to be a waiver on the other side. Right, I think Justin Fields had a pretty good idea when Ohio State was recruiting him that he would be able to get a waiver towards the end of last year. So I think Justin knew when he left that he was going to be able to play right away at Ohio State, right? And so he went. I'm not sure that Luke Ford had that same assurance, but he went anyway. And so that's the problem, and that's the next step. But here was my view from 10,000 feet. And again, this plays into a much bigger picture. And I asked Nick Saban about it, and I asked Greg Sankey about it. I said, you know, we're talking about alcohol sales at stadiums. We're talking about transfer portal, which is essentially restricted free agency. We're talking about teams beefing up their schedules in anticipation of expanded playoffs. And we're talking about paying players for their likeness. Sounds a lot like the NFL, doesn't it, guys? Free agency, alcohol, paying players, expanded playoffs. So to me, again, as a traditionalist, as someone that's covered this league for a long time, I don't want to see college football go the way NASCAR went. I covered NASCAR. When it was the off season, when I was a beat guy at Auburn, Alabama, and Tennessee, when it was the summertime, I was doing NASCAR. I was a hard card member. I'd go to 12, 14 races a year. I was at half the speedways on the circuit. And NASCAR couldn't have been any bigger in the 90s and earlier in this millennium until about 2009, 2010. They ruined their product. They took away access, they put it in markets, and they changed the game, essentially.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, now you look at that. Now, I don't think college football is ever going to go quite that sour, but the message that I take from that is, don't mess with a good thing. And I think college football, people are trying to turn it into something. Turn it into something it's not. And if your playoffs get too big, that does detract from the regular season if you put too many teams in the playoff. It absolutely does. So that the lunatic fringe can be happy in January with the playoff, we're going to punish the people that enjoy it in September, October, November, so that everybody can jump on board for 2 or 3 weeks in January and you capture the lunatic fringe. I don't think that's a good argument. As for paying playoffs, I heard what Dabo Swinney said, or paying players. I heard what Dabo said. He said, that's fine. But now they got to pay for their own health insurance. They got to pay for their own college, too. Otherwise, you got a Title IX situation on your hand. So there's always unintended consequences when you take these steps. And I think people need to consider them before they charge forward and say, this is a good idea or that's a good idea. Because as things stand, you've already got the best conference in college football in the SEC. The data shows you that. Right, with the ratings and the championships.
Sure.
And in Sanford Stadium, you already have one of the top, in my opinion, two or three settings in college football between the city of Athens and Sanford Stadium, and even its proximity to Atlanta for those people who live far away. So you've already got a great thing here. Why do you want to mess with it?
Well, that's human nature. Mike, it's called the creep. Things just have a way of creeping to something else.
It certainly does. Yeah. Mike, I do want to ask you, Mike, about an article you wrote this morning for DogNation.com. You had a chance to sit with Paul Feinbaum down in Destin. Now, he made a proclamation that Georgia-Florida is, quote, the hottest rivalry in the SEC right now, and sort of alluded that maybe it's even hotter than Auburn-Alabama. So what is it about this rivalry now? And listen, in all due respect, just the game itself, I don't care where the thing's played right now, but in terms of the football game itself, what is it? Does it feel like Georgia has really turned a corner in terms of beating Florida right now? And where do these two teams stand in terms of the rivalry?
Yeah, right now is the operative word, and Kirby Smart, you know, is responsible for this direction. I think we'd all agree, guys, that, you know, Kirby Smart's come in and done some things to elevate the program. I mean, I think we're all in agreement with that. I think everybody's in agreement that Kirby's got the right vision for Georgia football and how he handles things and how he keeps his team focused and the decisions that he's made. And he, you know, he made it pretty clear, you know, what a, you know, that they're taking away a really key recruiting weekend. So yeah, right now, you know, he's beat Florida. But here's the thing. Kirby got hired to win a national championship. Now, beating Florida is part of the equation, but Kirby's goal is to win a national championship. I did a story yesterday, you know, where Kirby said, I'm not gonna make it about one game. Feinbaum wants to turn it into, well, you can't get over the Alabama hump. Kirby's not looking at Alabama right now. All right, Kirby's looking at Vanderbilt right now. And then he's going to look at Arkansas State, and then he's going to look at Murray State, and then he's going to look at Notre Dame, because he gets it, right? You none of that other stuff matters if you don't beat these teams you're supposed to beat. It's like Gene Stallings used to say, you don't think it's a big game, you just lose one of them. You'll see how big of a game it is. So, and Kirby's the same way with the Florida thing, right? So, but to your answer your question, yeah, the net effect is Georgia is better than Florida right now. Kirby Smart has a better football program than Florida. Kirby Smart is out recruiting Florida, and that's why they're beating him on the football field. And you know he's got a better mindset. His team has more focus. It's better policed. There's more discipline. You know, I know there were some issues this spring. I think that was a growing pain. I think that had to do with somewhat of a vacuum of leadership. Some new leaders needed to step forward. The team's getting young. It's turning over quickly. A lot of guys are moving on. And they weren't there this spring. And I think it was a learning lesson. And I think Kirby, you know, acted appropriately. I think those stadium steps made a difference. And I think there's going to be some barriers in place moving forward, you know, to present those sort of off-field issues that hit Georgia this spring. And they weren't that severe relative to other programs. But they were severe enough that Kirby took action and protected the University of Georgia and the direction it was going. So all that, I'm bringing that up because all that goes together. All that adds up. All that matters. And all you got to do is look at the situations Florida had this spring and how quickly Florida looks like it's gone off the rails. I mean, Florida's lost some momentum. Now, as far as the dynamics of the rivalry and why it's quote-unquote hot, I think, you know, from where Paul comes from on that is, you know, in terms of social media. Social media does create a narrative, and that narrative carries over into Paul's show every day, and he talks to those people. And let's face it, you know, Florida in the 1990s was the most dominant program in the SEC. Looking back, it's kind of miraculous that they didn't win more than one national championship because they were that dominant and that good. They won. Steve Spurrier won six SEC championships between 1991 and 2000. You know, they were that good. They were that far ahead of the curve. Spurrier was that great of a coach. And what went with that was a certain level of confidence and arrogance. I'd probably equate it to the Dallas Cowboys fans, right? You know who they are. They'll tell you who they are. They'll put that license plate on the car. And when they win, oh, gosh, do they talk a lot. And that's just the way Florida's program is built. And now, you know, they're anxious to say they're back. They're eager to say that. And they finished the season with a very dominant win over Michigan in the Peach Bowl. And so they felt like that was the sign, the signal, that Florida football was back. Meanwhile, you know, Georgia – you know, the guys collectively weren't as invested in the Sugar Bowl as they needed to be, and they got beat by a touchdown by a Texas team that was, you know, on its game and playing for 10 wins, trying to win, you know, trying to play in a bowl game for the first time outside of its state since 2011. That was a program win. That was a marquee win for Texas on a day where Georgia, you know, was disappointed to be in the Sugar Bowl because it thought it belonged in the playoff. So it, the way the seasons ended, Florida was on a higher note, even though we saw, you know, Georgia dominate Florida once again. So I think that got the Florida fans jacked up, and maybe some illusion that they're back on the same level as Georgia. And sometimes when fan bases have that level of confidence and it doesn't meet reality, you know, that leads to some of the exchanges that we see on Twitter between Georgia and Florida fans and on the Paul Feinbaum show. So I would agree from that standpoint that it's hot. But in reality, I don't even think Florida is the biggest threat to Georgia this season in the East.
Who do you like this is the biggest threat to Georgia?
I think Missouri could be pretty good, depending on how Kelly Bryant plays.
Interesting.
I think Derek Dooley's shown, you know, he's done a good job out there. And I know that game last year against Missouri was a lot tougher and closer than people realize. And, you know, you look at Missouri, and, you know, they had some a couple fluky losses. They should have never lost to Kentucky. And if they're not for that torrential rainstorm, they don't lose South Carolina. You take those losses away, Missouri's 10-2 last year. Now, there's questions. There's questions about how Kelly Bryant's going to fit in out there, but I was impressed with what Derek Dooley did there, and I think Missouri's a team in the East that I think they're a bit of a sleeper.
I agree with you on that, and that game's kind of turned into what the South Carolina game was and could still be, but that Missouri game's just a grinder every year. It's just that tough one every year. I totally agree with you on that.
Yeah,
one, for sure.
So I think, you know. So a lot of stuff came out of that last week. I was glad I was there. I was glad Feinbaum pulled me aside, and hopefully people read that story, because he tells the story about going in Mullen's office, and you know you got to read it though. I mean, it's just amazing. I when Paul was telling me that, I'm sitting there going, "Wow!" You know, I mean, I've done a lot of interviews in coaches' offices too, and I don't always say everything that was said, you know. But Paul just let it rip, man. I mean, I cornered him after the show, and I said, "Hey, man, I need to talk to you about this thing. I mean, I want to get your take on this." And I mean, he told the story, and I mean, I was like, "Man, people forget." You know, Paul sits up there and asks the questions every day, but when you turn around and ask him questions on the side like that, boy, that guy can tell a story. And he gave some pretty juicy details that I think Georgia fans are going to get pretty jacked up on. So, like I said, every now and then I like to turn the tables. So, guys, I want to turn the tables on you now. I wasn't there last night, right? I was, you know, yeah. Coming back from Destin. I want to know what the heck happened to Georgia baseball.
Yeah, they ran into a buzzsaw called the Florida State Seminoles. Do not know where all that came from, but they rose to the occasion, and they were the better team this weekend than Georgia. I mean,
here's my question. Doesn't good pitching beat good hitting?
Yeah, it generally does. Yeah, but you know, it's funny. It's like, all right, see this. Now, this is all going to sound like me making excuses, and it's more like just
no.
Me,
it's
more like me trying to, you know, lay on the couch and talk to my therapist. But it's like all those Braves teams over the years that were built on all that great pitching and only won one World Series. It's like, can a team be built for a regular season more than a 3 or 4 game series in the post? You know, that those are the kind of questions that I've been asking myself over the last 12 hours. You know, Florida State comes in and they just get hot. The conditions, I mean, the home runs that were hit at Foley Field this week, and there were like 30 homers hit this weekend by these six games, and I think the next highest at a regional was like 16 or 17. I mean, something bizarre. It was just a weird weekend weather-wise, but the pitching, yeah, I mean, you would think, hey, you're going to neutralize the hitting, and that wasn't the case this weekend. And sometimes teams just get hot at the right time, and, you know, the Seminoles probably playing with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder about being dissed and that kind of thing, and it being potentially Coach Martin's last series. And as it turns out, it's not. I mean, there's just a lot of things. I'm still trying to come to grips with this myself, because it was not the kind of weekend I expected. I mean, I'll definitely admit that. It was a great season with a disappointing end. One of my buddies texted me, and he said he compared it to a number one seed in the NCAA basketball tournament, not losing to the 16, but losing to like the 8 or the 9, you know, not getting out of the first weekend. And I think that's a pretty good analogy. That's kind of what it feels like.
Here's what I'd compare it to. And just, you know, again, I wasn't there to see the game, but just the fact that Georgia lost to Florida State. Number one, you look at the seeding, and you say, I don't want to sound like a fan or anything, but you look at the seeding as a four, and you feel good about being the overall four seed.
Yeah.
You see Georgia Tech's three. And you go, give me a break. Georgia Tech's a three, and okay, all right, so strike one. You kind of go, all right, yeah, you're a four seed. But then you got Florida State. It's like if you're in the NCAA basketball tournament and you play Michigan State, the nine seed that year. Hey, that's still Tom Izzo on Michigan State.
Exactly.
They might be a nine seed, but that's a program that knows how to win.
Exactly.
And Florida State is a program steeped in tradition and expectation. And here's a chance. Again, this is kind of like, kind of like the Texas team that Georgia played. That wasn't just any Texas team. That was a Texas team with something to prove, with an opportunity. And here's a Florida State team playing for a coach that's retiring with a lot of pressure at a university with expectation. Those guys didn't go there to be whatever seeds they were. They went there because they think Florida State's a national championship program. And so they showed up in Georgia having the opportunity to prove that, right?
Yeah.
So that's one thing. I agree. Drawing Florida State, that wasn't much. That was tough. We saw the bracket right away. We went, oh, geez, Florida State. Yeah, oh, man, yeah. That is not a team you want coming to town in the first week. And then here's the thing, guys. Even if they win, they'd have had to play LSU. They'd have had to play the New York Yankees, at college base. I mean, let's be honest. The seeding in the tournament bracket was not good for Georgia. The number four looked good, but the bottom line was you had to go through Florida State and LSU to get to the College World Series, and that was not good, and I think Georgia deserved better than that for their regular season, Dave Logan. I do.
Yeah. Mike, always great chatting with you, my man. We appreciate it. Enjoy the Monday conversations. We'll catch you again next week.
All right, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Mike Griffith from the AJC's DogNation.com. As Tony Schiavone would say, we are desperately out of time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.